You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We are rooted in community support and engagement. Thank you for helping us stay on air.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 15th, 2026, and April 16th, 2012. Well, despite protestation to the contrary, Canada is still supplying arms in aid of the genocide in Palestine. The Carney regime obscures the trade by using Trump's gangster state as a plausible deniability cutout, while Canadian war materiel transits to Israel, much as America used Canada to supply Britain before officially entering the war against Hitler in Europe. The fact U.S. policy is concomitant with Israel's genocide, though never mentioned in the press, is glaringly obvious. The same can be said for Canada and the rest of America's willing coalition of collaborator nations around the world. For the present, citizen action is the only avenue in stopping the impending West Asia Holocaust. In Canada, arms embargo now are trying. Their recent Elbit Out of Canada Day of Action took the message to the sidewalks outside governing MPs' offices across the country. I went down to the demonstration in front of Victoria Liberal MP Will Greaves' office on the sidewalk with arms embargo now in the first half, and iconic activist, scholar, and former leader of the Green Party of Canada, Joan Russo, died August 6th. Joan founded the Global Compliance Research Project, whose work digging through international law and compliance with environmental agreements already signed but not ratified, and those ratified but not acted upon, is a signal effort. Joan was a frequent guest on this program going back to the year 2000, and I featured today a conversation we had as she readied to go down to Venezuela in 2012. Joan Russo, presente, in the second half, but first, pounding the pavement for peace with arms embargo now. I'm standing here with Bobby Arbus. Bobby, I was a little bit late getting down here. Do you want to tell me what we're looking at and who you guys are and what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, so this is part of a national day of action by the Arms Embargo Now. It's a loose-knit coalition of several hundred, you know, social, environmental justice organizations, civil society groups, including Palestinian Youth Movement, Independent Jewish Voices, QP, National, Locals, Public Service Alliance of Canada, and this is part of an ongoing campaign that's been active now for a couple of years to get the Canadian government to impose a full two-way arms embargo on Israel, and we've been badgering our local member of parliament now ever since he got elected, because he's a pipeline from a fairly, you know, progressive constituency to the House of Commons. And initially, Will Greaves signed onto the arms embargo now pledge, but he has done very little to take concrete action to move the dial in terms of getting Canada to cut ties with Israel, both in terms of military support and also in terms of sanctioning companies that are profiting off the genocide in Palestine. And of course, Elbit Systems, as we know, is the largest Israeli military manufacturer. This is a company that
made famous in England with Palestine Action Group.
That's right, exactly. And they're netting like 1,000 million dollars on a quarterly basis on the blood and guts of Palestinian people, and they market all these, munitions and weapon systems and sensors and surveillance systems as battle proven on Palestinians. They show up at military trade shows and are boasting that the products that they're marketing abroad they work on civilian populations. And so when Will Greaves refused to vote in favor of a bill to close the massive
this is the Loopholes Act.
The Loopholes Act, and just as to kind of just give a very quick nutshell of what that Loopholes Act is when and Canada implemented the Arms Trade Treaty. It was in the Canada Import and Export Act. They were concerned that if they, shut down all military exports to war criminals, that they would jeopardize their military
market. That's a pretty broad list.
That's right. The biggest market amongst for Canadian military exports are those military exports going to the United States. And so they essentially, when they wrote the legislation, they provided a massive exemption on all Canadian military exports to the U.S., which is 70% of our total military exports. And we know that when Canada said we are no longer sending weapons to Israel after October 7, 2023, that was a 70% lie, because there was still this massive backdoor transfer of weapons components, including major components produced in Canada for the F-35 bombers that were dropping bunker bombs on civilian populations in Gaza. And so the Canadian public is essentially being lied to, and we pressured our local member of parliament really heavily to support that bill, which he didn't. And he said at the time, well, it wasn't strong enough. There were other measures that could be taken that would be more effective, and that he didn't want to support that bill because we could do better, essentially. And since then, we've been asking him how we can do better, and he hasn't even responded to any of our emails at all. We keep showing up in public and embarrassing him, and decrying the Liberal government for essentially arming a genocide. But now we have a new campaign, which is to basically sanction a company that is directly fueling, major crimes against humanity. And so we're asking him if he will take that to Ottawa and actually do something to back up his pledge to support a two-way arms embargo in Israel and advocate for Canada to sanction Elbit the way Canada has sanctioned countries and companies that from Russia. And so we're looking at a gaping double standard that speaks to Canada's deep-seated Zionist bias, right?
Well, I went up to the office a moment ago to get a comment from them, from the member Greaves, and they told me to refer to a statement that they had made previously of a release. I haven't read that statement. Do you know what he's talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I've read that statement.
Is this it's too weak statement?
He kind of co-opts the language of the movement, and in saying that, MP Greaves 100% agrees that Canada should not be arming a country that is committing, a genocide.
Did he admit that there is a genocide being committed?
He does now and again. He waffles on it, but he has tacitly admitted it without being explicit about it. But he calls it war crimes against humanity and war crimes, and he's tacitly acknowledging that genocide is a war crime.
Well, that language necessitates certain responses in law.
Indeed, it does. On its own, it requires accountability, right? And so now we're in a situation where we have a company that is doing, has like over 48 Canadian registered military contractors, who supply weapons components to Elbit that are being used to kill Palestinians in real time, and so is he gonna support a sanction on Elbit or not? It's not enough just to sanction settler violence. Elbit is a form of settler violence, right? The company is directly fueling a genocide, and so there's no separation between settler violence and what Elbit Systems does to fuel that violence. And that's why we're here, and that's the message that we're delivering to the member of parliament today. And we will not let up. We've our little organizing group is very persistent, and we work well together, and we're building our base. And we will show Mr. Greaves that if he doesn't take action on this particular portfolio, which he has committed to take action on by signing that arms embargo now pledge, that we will make sure that he will never represent this riding again. And that's our pledge to him.
Well, Bobby, finally, in England, I mentioned Palestine Action. They've been proscribed by the government. Showing support for them is a crime. It's listed as terrorism. We've seen thousands of arrests there. The Canadian government is moving, it seems, in a similar direction. They're trying to proscribe Palestine Action Canada. They have National Scribe Sammy Doon, amongst other things. What do you and your group, how do you react to these increasingly stringent legal maneuvers by the government here?
Well, we see how it's part of a broader Zionist narrative, which is to portray anybody who criticizes Israel or even questions the legitimacy of a Jewish state in Palestine as anti-Semitic. And that, I think that's where it's coming from. And you know, many of our organizers, we come from independent Jewish voices. Like we were organizing actively with IJV, which is an organization that is dedicated to undercutting that narrative completely. But we wanted to broaden the focus to kind of include, you know, our fellow Canadian citizens, who to make everybody realize that as Canadians, we too are complicit in these crimes by virtue of the fact that there are all these Canadian institutions and Canadian corporations and the Canadian government that kind of that runs with this narrative of essentially criminalizing anybody who stands up to oppose a genocide. Can you imagine, like, during the Second World War, Canadian citizens being convicted of of whatever the bogus allegations are for opposing the Nazi occupation of Europe? You know what I mean? I'm not saying that there's necessarily historical parallels there.
Well, there is parallels with Canadians arrested for going to Spain before the Second War.
There are precedents of that. That's interesting. Well, evidently they're carrying on the same kind of right-wing tradition of vilifying activists for opposing fascism. And it's just, I don't think it's going to go far. I see how there's a lot of resources. Like, for instance, the Jewish federations in North America are funded to a tune of like $16 billion a year. To spin this narrative and to kind of make it seem like people who are just standing up for fundamental human rights, are as terrorist enablers, right? But what are really the message here? The way we kind of spin this message, in the proper direction, is to portray the state of Israel as essentially a terror state that is supported by so-called liberal democracies, where there's a thin line, between, supporting, the business operations of military contractors and essentially, just enabling straight-up fascism.
What next then, Bobby? Today is the 13th of August. You say across Canada there's these kinds of demonstrations going on.
This one was actually unique because we had, today's day of action is focused on military contractors in Canada. There's like 48 of them who are directly doing business with Elbit. Like, they're providing weapons components for Elbit systems. Here we have two contractors. There's ThyssenKrupp and Babcock. They do business with Elbit, but they don't. But they're all within the civilian realm. Whatever that means. I honestly haven't done a deep dive into that. There's a fine line between.
It's a pretty tangled web.
It's a tangled web, yeah. And we wanted to kind of avoid it, to just simply focus on the responsibility of the Canadian government. I mean, but today's day of action is mostly putting like the contractors on notice, right? And letting them know, like a lot of these contractors, and there's one that it was a microwave corporation in Montreal that just the other day canceled their existing orders with Elbit. So we're putting the pressure on these corporations, but we're also not wanting to like let the government off the hook, in just like doing the thing that can actually stop all these military contracts, which is to sanction Elbit and make it illegal to do business with them. Yeah, and that's the focus for today's action.
Well, thanks a lot, Bobby.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Lobbying for politicians and representatives are visiting our cities to sell their weapons at arms fairs, using terms like battle-tested to advertise their effectiveness and killing. They even have a subsidiary called Geospectrum Technologies in Nova Scotia. Now, dozens of organizations and thousands of citizens are demanding an end to business with Elbit. This is not only being demanded by Canadian citizens, but obligated by federal and international law. Canada's own arms trade treaty prohibits the transfer of arms to states committing genocide. And under international law, as a signatory to the Genocide Convention, Canada has binding obligations not only to avoid complicity, but to act to prevent genocide. Our government is not even following its own laws, let alone international law.
In 2024, the UN Human Rights Council stated that any state sending weapon to Israel risks complicity in war, crimes, and genocide, and should cease the sale, transfer, and diversion of arms and other military equipment to Israel, even if they are executed under existing export licenses. This UN Council emphasized the need for an arms embargo on Israel, particularly in light of states' obligations under the Geneva Convention. And yet, we do not have anything even close to an arms embargo. Since the initial suspension of only a handful of contracts and the prohibition of new ones in 2023, our government has repeatedly refused to take any action that would meaningfully reduce the arms trade with Israel, such as closing the U.S. loophole or imposing broad sanctions, instead taking the side of the war machine and supply chains. The sanctions that have been instituted are labeled as extremist settler violence in the occupied Palestinian territories and include only two far-right Israel cabinet ministers, 17 individual settlers, and 12 organizations related to these settlers. Not a single sanction related to the genocide in Gaza. Zero sanctions on weapons manufacturers, suppliers, government entities, or the Israeli army, leaving the machine of genocide running smoothly with nothing standing in the way of Canadian companies supplying it.
That's right.
Our Foreign Affairs Minister, Anita Anand, even invokes the Geneva Convention and international law when announcing these flimsy sanctions, but refuses to do what is actually required to stop the flow of weapons. Though, of course, our Prime Minister will continue to toe the line of we haven't approved any new permits, but this hasn't stopped the weapons from flowing either. In 2023, the year of October 7th, a record high of more than $30 million in military goods was sold to Israel. In 2024, just down to $18.9 million, a reduction from 2023, but still more than almost all previous years. And in 2025, still $14.6 million of weapons sold to Israel. And none of these numbers include arms shipped to Israel via the U.S. because it is not tracked or regulated by the federal government, a loophole the Liberals refused to close when it voted down Bill C-233 earlier this year. Interestingly, during my research, I found out that Canada did have an arms embargo on Israel from 1987 until 1996, from the start of the First Intifada until the Israel Free Trade Agreement was signed. So it is possible, which means they're simply choosing not to.
Yeah.
Canada, in fact, currently has sanctions on 24 countries, none of these Israel.
Shame.
Let's compare this how Israel or Russia has been punished since the invasion of Ukraine. Comprehensive sanctions have been placed that include 876 entities and 1,700 individuals in Russia, including leaders in the defense and energy sectors, companies linked to drone production, and entities in the finance sector that help finance Russia's war of aggression. Just last week, Minister Anand announced a new sanction for a weapons manufacturer supplying tanks to the Russian National Guard. This isn't to say Russia doesn't deserve these sanctions. Instead, it proves that there is a precedent and Canada has the ability to act when it wants to. Furthermore, Foreign Affairs Canada described the war in Ukraine as an unprovoked war of aggression, which it certainly is. But in the media releases regarding Palestine, it is described as inhumane treatment of the inhabitants of the occupied territories and obstacles to peace and realization of a two-state solution, and then ends the media release with, "The measures announced today do not deviate from our unwavering support for Israel's security, and we continue to condemn the horrific attacks of the 7th of October by Hamas." This rhetoric continues to portray Palestinians as the aggressor and Israel as the victim, and values Israel's security over Palestinian lives. Let's remind ourselves that Israel is the one that has maintained a blockade in Gaza for almost 20 years, routinely killing and abducting civilians and controlling all exits. People frequently describe it as the world's largest open-air prison. This is why we have to take it into our own hands. We must do what our government refuses to do. After years of sustained pressure, a grassroots campaign forced Scotiabank to divest from Elbit Systems, pulling hundreds of millions of dollars of funding. And just last week, the company Apollo in Montreal declared it would no longer work with Elbit. These wins have proved that companies don't want the reputational headache of being associated with Elbit and can be pressured to end this relationship. Across Canada, there are dozens of companies with ties to Elbit Systems, many of them sending components to Elbit factories in Israel to this day. Two of them right here in Victoria, Babcock and ThyssenKrupp, who work with Elbit on naval and submarine systems, demand that these companies end their relationship with Elbit and don't let them rest until they do. Sanction Elbit now.
Sanction Elbit now.
Sanction Elbit now.
End the double standard. How? Sanction Elbit now. End the double standard. How? Sanction Elbit now. End the double standard. How? Sanction Elbit now. End the double standard. How? Sanction Elbit now. End the double standard. How? Sanction Elbit now. Want to introduce our next speaker? He's a real stranger to all of us. A diehard activist who's been on the front lines in solidarity with Palestine ever since I knew him, and that's like at least 30 years ago, sad to say. But I want to just bring up our dear friend here, Larry Hannant, from Arms Embargo Now Victoria, who will speak on why our MP, Will Greaves, must take a stand in Ottawa to advocate unequivocally for Canada to sanction Elbit.
Yeah, okay, so thanks, Bobby, and he sort of dated me. I'm getting older and shorter, so I'm standing up here to use the podium if I can, if you don't mind, right? So
we'll stretch you afterwards.
Great, thanks, yeah. So this is getting to be like our second home outside of Will Greaves' office. Yeah. Several of you, many of you, I think, probably were here on February 17th when we demanded that our MP, Will Greaves, support Bill C-233, which was the No More Loopholes bill introduced in the House of Commons by Vancouver NDP MP Jenny Kwan. That bill, as we know, was intended to deal with basically the end around that allows Canadian weapons and components and arms to go first to the United States and then on to Israel, where they're fully engaged in the genocide against the Palestinians. That bill was one that we took up here in Victoria very actively, and we, I think, pushed Will Greaves to support that. We met with him twice in advance of the actual vote, and on each case, he towed the Liberal line, which was basically, it was irresponsible, it was cumbersome, it would harm Canadian exports, it would even impede Canadian arms, even so much as bootlaces going to NATO. So we expected that when the vote came up in March, that he would vote no, along the lines as dictated by the government of Canada, by the Liberal Party. To our surprise, the vote did not pass, but 15 Liberal members of Parliament broke ranks and supported the bill. Others abstained, and overwhelmingly, unfortunately, the bill did not pass. It failed. But Will Greaves, our Member of Parliament, abstained. And taking account for the pressure that we and the people of Victoria had put upon him, he acknowledged a couple of important things in a special statement to explain why he had abstained. And I want to just quote him because it's important. He did affirm one important principle, which was that Canadian-produced equipment, quoting him, must never be used to commit war crimes or crimes against humanity. Who can argue with that?
So why did he abstain?
Yeah, why did he abstain? Why did he not vote against in favor of it? Yes. Now, he added in that statement about his abstention, he said, the intention behind this bill is right, but this bill isn't strong enough for me to support it.
So write your own.
Not strong enough for Soft Willie.
That's what we said. Carrying on with what he said, instead, I will keep pushing for effective legislation, end quote. And he added, as that work continues, I'll keep you updated on how it's going. Okay, we said good. We hear you, Will Greaves. Let's see the effective legislation that denies Canadian arms going to the United States and then on to Israel. Let's see you act in support of that supposed principle that you support, which that says that Canadian equipment must never be used to commit war crimes or crimes against humanity. A month after the vote in April of 2025, we wrote to Will Greaves, by that time the elected member of Parliament, to ask about that quote-unquote effective legislation he was promising. Would he consider getting some assistance from us, from Arms Embargo Now? We'd be happy to help him write something effective. Another month passed. We got no response. Another month passed. We wrote again. Where was this effective legislation? No answer. It seems that the dog ate Professor Greaves' homework. Bad dog.
Bad will.
So here we are, 5 months later, and nothing from Greaves. We know he's a busy man, so we decided to make it easy for him and the government to specifically target Israeli genocide and prevent Canadian supplies from assisting it. Here it is. Sanction Elbit Systems. As Julian has said, Elbit is involved with 80 to 85% of the Israeli weapons manufacturing. It is fully engaged with the genocide that goes on against us of Gaza and, of course, against the other Israeli aggression against Lebanon, against Syria, against Iran, you name it. So Elbit is a target, a specific target and a legitimate target. So we say to Will Greaves, it's not that hard. This is not difficult. It's not rocket science, which we know you're not, so you're a poli-sci prof, you know, right? Not a rocket scientist. So sanction Elbit Systems. Now, the interesting thing is, he was talking about writing effective legislation. Well, you don't even have to do that because the government of Canada already has legislation. It's called the Special Economic Measures Act. And it's been used, as Julian mentions, it's been used to sanction many different organizations, many countries, over 20 of them, from Belarus to Zimbabwe. They've all been sanctioned under this legislation. And many organizations, many individuals. In fact, there's a plane, a jetliner, sitting on the tarmac and has been sitting on the tarmac at Toronto Airport since 2022 because it's sanctioned. So it ain't that hard. There's legislation already in existence. All that has to be done is for Greaves and the Liberals to come up with the guts to use it against a state committing genocide and the arms maker that does it, that facilitates that. So we've got a political task to take on right here. We've got to go out to this community and, one, make sure that every person has Elbit Systems on their lips so they know that this is a notorious company, a company that has business dealings in Canada, a company that we can act against. Sanctions must be applied against it. And our task as well is to pressure the government and our member of parliament to use the tool they have. Effective legislation already exists, quote unquote, and your duty is to use it. So our task here is to work on behalf of the Palestinians, to work to free Palestine from the oppressive occupation of Zionist, a Zionist state. And this is one of the ways that we can do their, so we can make help them out in this moment. They've shown such resilience. We now have to step up.